Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tag him in it and put a retaker, lad. Here's a game y'all like.
Right on that Hoover, that one.
Yuckity yuck, McMannequin.
The British Bulldog is part of the new generation.
You may all bow before the Mabel.
Here comes the jackknife.
On lives the new generation and the World Wrestling Federation.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review, rolling the R's. As the other Cultaholic lads are getting ready to... I can't stop doing that, I'll be sick. As the Cultaholic lads get ready to rumble, we're here via our IcaPro-powered DeLorean, getting ready to tumble further into the pit that is the new generation era of the World Wrestling Federation. Who be we? I be Fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, former Cultaholic heavyweight champion Tom Campbell from Isolation Station 24601, now with an extra bathroom. And I am here with my friend, the bear in the big blue bar cage. He is the head pen of Cultaholic. And if you were to offer him a pencil, that pencil would not just be unrequited, not be unrequired, but it would be undeservedly shoved right up your bottom because he needs a pen. He gets it right every time. That's why he has a pen. He is Justin Henry, and he is from off of America.
How you doing there, Tommy?
Mate, we're doing good. It is the day before my birthday when this goes out. And I am excited that Vince McMahon decided in his infinite wisdom to put the Royal Rumble on my birthday, as it's my favorite one. So thanks, Vince. I'm glad of that. I'm 37 tomorrow, Justin.
Every time I hear 37, I think of Clerks, although I can't say why.
Oh, stop it. And what's nice is that you and I sat here a year ago, and I didn't think I'd make it this far, but here we are. We made it to 37.
See?
I don't know whether you have this... We made it. I don't know whether you had the same existential crises as I did. I don't know whether we talked about this last week when they revealed all the manias for the next couple of years. Did you have a bit of an existential crisis when they did that?
No, because to be honest, I mean, I know all the Super Bowls in advance years where they're going to be. So it's kind of like I know Super Bowl 59 is going to be in a few years. And it's just so I've kind of accepted the fact that I'll be 39 at the time of 30, Mania 39, and you and I have that link up there.
We have that special bond, don't we? Where like we're just as the Rock is rock bottoming Roman Reigns en route to becoming WWE champion, we'll be tickling the 30s. So that'll be a lovely time, have my whole.
Even if I couldn't remember the matches, like, what was it like for Mania 17? The bliss of youth, getting my driver's license, and just being so happy and carefree. Mania 35, oh, my lumbar region. Oh, Jesus.
Well, what's that Britney Spears song? My lower back is killing me. Oh, Britney, she knew. But look, we can't talk about time. We have to go back in it to 1995. This is the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review. Justin Henry and myself have been charged for crimes we didn't commit to watch every episode of Monday Night Raw from the very beginning. And we are currently just motoring away from WrestleMania 11, heading towards In Your House, where you can win an actual house. And we are about to talk about Monday Night Raw from April the 17th, 1995. You can watch it on the WWE Network, or as it'll soon be known, the almighty Peacock service. And before we get into the rigors of this week's episode of Monday Night Raw, let me give you a little rundown as to what is happening in the wrestling world in this week. UFC are on the up. We had UFC 5 on April the 7th, 10 days before this Raw goes to air. That saw Dan Severn win the Super Fight Championship tournament, won 50 grand and a lovely belt. We saw Ken Shamrock battle Royce Gracie to a 36-minute draw in that. But to go back to the Seven and the Seven win, the Super Fight tournament win, Dan Severn's the reigning NWA world champion at this time. Mm-hmm. And he became the first to hold a wrestling and an MMA title simultaneously. So stick that up your jumper, Brock Lesnar. This was quite a significant pay-per-view in the MMA world, Justin. Do you know why?
Well, I know that it was a big part of the Shamrock Gracie rivalry, which, by the way, it is UFC back then is so surreal compared to now when you're watching Conor McGregor get punched into oblivion in Abu Dhabi by Dustin Poirier. It's UFC has changed so much in the last 25, 26 years. It's not even funny. But significance.
Such a different world.
I believe Tank was on this show somewhere, wasn't he?
He certainly was indeed, yeah. He was, but he's not the significance.
What is significance?
The significance is the buy rate.
Oh. Right?
Because, and we don't normally talk about the UFC on here because, we sort of mentally they're different worlds. But this was an interesting, kind of troubling time for wrestling as a whole because UFC was very much on the march here. The UFC 5 pay-per-view hovered around a 1.05 buy rate. Mania 11 was 1.1. So, like, your granddaddy of them all, no matter how awful it was, wasn't massively far behind what UFC were offering. And not only that, but there was a big event. There was a big turning of the tide in Japan for this. In both major weekly publications in Japan, which was Gong and...
Is it baseball?
There was two. Can't remember what it was, but in both major Japanese publications, the two biggest weeklies in Japan, UFC were on the front cover, and specifically Dan Severn with both the NWA and the UFC championship over his shoulder. This was like the coming out party for the Ultimate Fighting Championship, wasn't it, Justin?
So you're telling me that the NWA champion almost outdrew the WWF champion?
Yes. Yes, he did. What a world, eh? What a world. Severn, man. Like, every time I saw that and I found myself going down a bit of a Google rabbit hole, like looking up pictures of Dan Severn with both belts on his shoulders. And then there was an episode of Raw, which we'll cover in a couple of years' time, where he is on Monday Night Raw with the NWA Championship and the UFC Superfight Championship. Like, God! This guy really felt like such an unmissable attraction for Western wrestling.
Problem is, he didn't really have a whole lot of charisma. He was very dry.
That is the big thing.
He was so dry and understated, which, that's nothing wrong with that. He's businesslike and he beats your ass. But it's in a world that's predicated on Gaga and, a lot of sizzle. Especially in the Attitude Era, when it was more about sizzle than that, than the actual steak itself. Severn kind of stuck out like a sore thumb. But, he's too good for that world.
He really is. But it was to see him with those belts and to think like a big guy. And like you say, the big issue was it was that charisma void that they couldn't fill. There's not enough Jim Cornettes that you can stuff down that hole to fill that charisma void that Dan Severn left. God love him. God love him. He's a beast. Quite literally a beast.
Well, it's just interesting to me because it's coming along at a time when wrestling couldn't be more childish. We have the occupational gimmicks and the pandering toward elementary school kids with the Bazooka Joe sense of humor. and just the Technicolor bile that they're putting out there. It's, you couldn't chase adults away more. And I mean, and look what rose in 95, UFC, and what became more prominent in wrestling, ECW. Mm-hmm. Because the teenagers and the adults needed, were seeking shelter somewhere. So what became the, you know, their drug of choice? Realism. Grit.
There you go. They saw an opportunity. They saw an opening in the market. And they gave people what they wanted. Something with a bit of earthiness to it. Something with a bit of richness to it that wasn't your sports entertainment. And there's Dan leading the way. In a slightly grittier version of sports entertainment, the Sabu situation seems to be taking on a life of its own this week. So Sabu, is he in ECW? Is he not in ECW? According to The Observer this week, as speculated here in The Observer, Sabu has reopened business relations with Dennis Coraluzzo. He's the New Jersey-based NWA promoter who had a long time behind the scenes and sometimes public feud with ECW. He's also entered into some serious discussions with Eric Bischoff about working for WCW, although his prime focus would remain New Japan. ECW even had to cancel a show this week because it was headlined by Sabu versus Cactus Jack. They were unable to get an opponent of a Sabu caliber to replace him. They didn't want to follow in the footsteps of promoters who put false advertising out there. So they just went, we can't find a suitable replacement. We're just going to cancel the show. Todd Gordon on ECW television this week made a statement saying Sabu was suspended. The chance of F Sabu, very evident throughout the show. And some have even claimed, even in spots where they didn't actually occur in the building, something they might have been added. I don't know if they were. I think the crowd were. ECW were just pretty aggressive about Sabu. What do you make of the whole Sabu situation?
Well, if I recall correctly, I think in this situation, Heyman may have advertised Sabu for an event he wasn't going to be appearing at in the first place, where he wouldn't have been available. And I think that was a big point of contention. So, but Heyman got in front of it and turned it around to make it look like Sabu was the bad guy in the situation.
He twisted the picture quite a lot, didn't he?
It's... So we hear. You mentioned Dennis Coraluzzo's name in that. Minor spoiler alert, his name might come up a few times in the next episode of War Stories.
Now on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/cultaholic.
Yes, War Stories Season 2 premiered this past Sunday with the Black Saturday episode, and there are 5 more for the season to come on a bi-weekly basis. But now I got the plug out of that cheap plug out of the way. Let's get back on topic here. Sabu was supposed to be in the 3-way dance for the tag team titles at the ECW Arena and was replaced by, of all people, Rick Steiner as Taz's tag team partner. talk about two stiff suplex machines.
I mean, Taz and Rick Steiner as a tag team. It's not a bad shout, to be fair.
No, it's not. It was them, Benoit Malenko, and Public Enemy for the belt in what was considered a pretty good match.
Nice. No, it wasn't what you wanted, but it's what you got. A little bit of moving and shaking from the World Wrestling Federation. The performer known as Unabomber, Glenn Jacobs, was in the office of the WWF working with the character development people.
Oh, no.
What's going on there? I wonder.
Run, Glenn.
Run, but come back later in the 90s. Missy Hyatt's been backstage at the WWF. She wants to get a job as a ring as a commentator.
They probably could have used her at that point.
Yeah, there was like an energy about Missy Hyatt that I think could have worked very well in the WWF right about now.
But then they would have, you know, sent her to classes to lose her Southern accent.
Do you reckon they would have done? Yeah.
Well, I mean,
they probably would have done.
I mean, Renee Young said recently that she had to take classes to try and shed her Canadian accent.
I suppose they would, wouldn't they?
Shivani had to take similar classes years ago.
If everybody looks the same, we'll get tired of looking at each other. Also, Dan Spivey's coming in.
Yes,
Spivey. There are rumors that he's going to go straight to the moon and teaming up with Sid. But we'll see what happens. Dave says, rumors have it he'll get a top spot as Sid's tag partner. If that's the case, nobody's been watching him for the past 10 years. Like, whoa, spicy.
Spivey's been fine in the ring. Where's Dave coming from?
I can't wait to talk about Dan Spivey.
Because they give him one of two good gimmicks that they created that year.
Yeah, a gimmick from 95 that was so good, they did it again in 2010.
Sort of.
We end the look back on the week in wrestling with a bat shine mental New Jack story.
Are there any other kind?
There certainly aren't, matey. So, 3 days before this episode of Raw airs, we go to Erlanger, Kentucky. Smoky Mountain Wrestling, set to put on a house show at Pearl's Palace, which is a nightclub over the river from Cincinnati. After a disastrous show the last time they were in, the club owners wanted to change the rent deal. SMW were planning on pulling out of the building anyway, but Jim Cornette had it under guidance that they were going to do one more show under the old deal at Pearl's Palace in Cincinnati. He found out close to the time of the show that, no, you're now doing it under the new deal and it's more expensive. Pony up. And to which Jim Cornette went, no. So somebody from SMW called Peel's Palace the morning before the show to cancel on behalf of SMW. But they'd kind of announced a wrestling show. So what they did at the palace was they got local promoter Bob Harmon and Johnny Diamond, and they put together a wrestling show comprised of locals from Les Thatcher's wrestling school. They put a sign outside that said, "This is not an SMW show." And it was professionals, and it was trainees from the wrestling school.
Mm-hmm.
D'Lo Brown and New Jack turned up anyway. Knowing that the show was canceled, they just turned up anyway. And they got into the building. They got booked on the show. And New Jack was part of the main event. But before the main event, New Jack decided to get in amongst it in the crowd and was with the fans, heckling all the wrestlers, some of whom, according to Dave, by all accounts, were too inexperienced to even be in the ring. Dave goes on to say, during a tag match, New Jack threw a bar table onto the shoulder of one of the wrestlers and separated their shoulder. And they've gone, although that was perhaps an accident. You threw a table at the poor lad. In the main event, a 10-man elimination tag. This one's in the bag. New Jack did a run-in, began throwing real punches in several people's faces, including giving one wrestler a 12-stitch cut from a punch in the mouth. New Jack later claimed the guy who had been racist backstage. There's no evidence of either of that. When it was apparent that New Jack was just taking liberties and punching people for real, a security guard for the building, a big tall geezer named Mike McCord, grabbed New Jack, who started fighting him until they threw New Jack out of the building. Police turned up to calm things down. Oh, New Jack, you wacky little fella.
I bet the fans never forgot that show.
Absolutely not. What a night. Do you remember hearing about this at the time, or is this fresh for your ears?
This is news to me, and I'm glad you shared that story because it only adds to the legend of New Jack.
Just every... And the thing is, you could read that, and sometimes you might go, oh, is that real, though? But then you see the parties involved, and you go, yeah, that's New Jack. It's real. That happened, I think, verbatim.
Many, many years ago, former ESPN writer Bill Simmons concocted this thing called the Tyson Zone. It's named for Mike Tyson. It's when a celebrity's behavior becomes so outlandish that when you hear any story about them, no matter how crazy it is, you automatically assume it's true because of their nature. Mm-hmm. Like, if I told you that Mike Tyson was going to open a farm and breed unicorns, you'd believe me.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'd ask where it is. I'd go visit.
If there are no ifs, ands, or buts in your mind about hearing the anecdote, that means that person has entered the Tyson Zone. Like, Marty Jannetty posted about finding gold under his yard. So he stole a backhoe and tried to dug the whole thing up and found the Jimmy Hoffa. You go, yep, typical Marty.
That's Marty. And then Marty confuses things, because then Marty will go, hey, I did a terrible thing. And then we'll all go, oh, Marty, mate, that's bad. Ah, you're all marks. Even the policeman that arrested me, I didn't even do it. And then we go, okay, mate, cool. And then a week later you go, but I did do it. Like, Marty, mate, just shut up.
Point is, New Jack is firmly implanted in the Tyson zone.
Point is, New Jack and Marty Jannetty should also face each other.
That would be interesting.
Oh, right. That is the wrestling news for this week. Let's throw it over to Justin Henry, talking us through Monday Night Raw for April 17th. Where and when are we, Justin?
Well, you've already said when, so let's go to the where. This was taped 2 weeks earlier at the Mid-Hudson Civic Center in Poughkeepsie, New York.
Yay, cold cooks, yes. Cold cuts.
Yes. It is the third hour of the taping. We're down to the scraps.
Oh, I love this. The third hour of a Raw taping is like, and I can only think of a British version of it, when you've had fish and chips and you've eaten the chips and you've eaten the fish and there's just like little bits of crustiness left at the bottom. Like, that is where we're at. We're at the bottom of a chippy bag when we get to these episodes of Raw.
I was thinking like the like some banquet or some dinner party, and like the steam tray with sweet potatoes. There's like a thin, cold layer of gunk at the bottom now. There's some possibly edible potatoes still in there, but is it worth it? Like,
it's grown like a skin.
Exactly, it is. It's borderline cannibalism if you bit into it at this point. It's got welts now.
Oh God, it can hear me.
Now, I noted on Twitter that we'd watched three good episodes of Raw in a row. Mm-hmm. And I counted the Brett Owen one match extravaganza as being good, because if you base it on match ratings, the average rating per match on that show was like 3.75 stars.
Not a bad night of wrestling.
Yeah, because it was
really not.
Because it was one goddamn match.
Yeah, exactly. That's the magic, that is. That is the trick. That's what we need to do. We just need one night, one match, one really good match, and some fluff around it. That's fine.
Then the last two shows had the Mania glow. Mm. Yeah, he had the Blaze Nakano show. Tremendous, because it had Sid turning on Sean off camera, which we made fun of it, but it was still an enjoyably energetic show. Mm-hmm. And then we had last week, which had the great six-man tag. So now we come to, well, this. as we said before, the scraps. Advertised going into the show were the debut of Jean-Pierre Lafitte as he faced Duke the Dumpster Drosy, and a tag team title match with Owen and Yoko defending against Bob Holly and the 1-2-3 Kid. So, kind of excited. This could be interesting. Oh, they failed to live up to expectations. They so failed to live up to expectations. We start with footage from Action Zone from the day before. Just a little teaser, though. We see the Million Dollar Corporation inside the ring. DiBiase's on mic. Bigelow's kind of like pensively hanging in the background. And we choose the new crowning jewel, good phrase to use here, of the Million Dollar Corporation, Sid. Just a small tease for further exposition later. But yes, Sid has now had the black cat thrown in front of him, so to speak, and is now the member of the Million Dollar Corporation, which is the kiss of death for anybody's career.
I've written in my notes here, this is like Ozzy Osbourne joining a Black Sabbath tribute band. It's like Liam Gallagher joining No Way Sis. Like, this is such, and do you know what? They are, we'll talk more about it later on, but God, what a bunch of yayos. The Million Dollar Corporation. they are delightfully crap at this point.
This is like John Gotti becoming a Dick Tracy villain. I popped Tom.
Oh, Oh, God. Oh, this is going to be fun. Oh, God. The Million Dollar Corporation. You stupid asses. John, do that, by the way. Thanks, mate. Yes.
Here's your new allies. Prune Face, Little Face, and Fuck Face. I'll leave it to you, the listener at home, to decide which one is which. So, I write my notes here. HFGS, which is now my shorthand for holy effing green screen.
Oh, it's not as bad this week.
What?
They've got the it's not as bad because last week they were like little tiny pixie men in Giant World from Super Mario Brothers 3. Like at least this week they've got like they've attempted to get the proportions and the dimensions right. At least this week there's an attempt. Like someone's had a word.
No green suits. I wonder why.
I wish they had.
So the running hour show here, we have our first little indication that Diesel versus Sid is going to be imminent. I can't not wait. But next week, Bam Bam Bigelow is getting a shot at the WWF Championship when he faces Diesel. The man who's coming off losing to a football player at WrestleMania 11 is getting a world title match.
Why would you promote that the moment Raw starts? Like, would you not announce that later? Like, hey, welcome to our show. Bin this off, next week's gonna be better.
Well,
it just seems weird to start off with an announcement for next week. Like, you surely give it a little bit of room to give the show room to breathe before you're telling people to tune in next week.
Well, it's interesting because this is the day after Easter, so this would have been one of the few nights a year that I could have stayed up and watched the whole episode of Raw.
Yeah.
My bedtime back in the day.
You could have seen this whole thing go down.
And this is the show we get. You think this would be the Diesel Bigelow show, but no.
Oh, man.
So, and then they plug the tag title match, and then we go to our opener, which is the occupational gimmick showdown between Duke the Dumpster Drosy against the debuting Jean-Pierre Lafitte.
Yes, some PCO goodness.
Well, PCO, yes, but let's hold off on the goodness here.
Some good history from Lawler as he's coming out, though. Like he's up on his pirateness.
So he got WrestleMania 11 illegally.
Yes, that's exactly what he did. Yes. He's hey Vince, I've got a BitTorrent. What the hell's a BitTorrent? You'll know in 5 years.
Hey, let me go on dial up here. Watch this whole pay per view.
Somebody's uploaded WrestleMania 11 to Prodigy.
I'm trying to imagine watching Mania 11 on the internet back then, with like what it would do to like the power in all the houses around you. Like it'd be Christmas vacation. You gotta hit the auxiliary button, turn it all back on.
And it would be on a bit crunched window,
mm-hmm.
About the size of a cup. with the majority of that window taken up by the time skipper along the bottom. And it would have just been like incredibly bit crunched. It would have been amazing.
It sounds like more trouble than it's worth.
It does, doesn't it? I think the internet at that point was, in general, more trouble than it's worth.
I can recall coming home from school many a day in seventh grade in 1997 and trying to get on AOL 3.0 or 4.0, whatever the hell it was, and hearing that dial tone for like 15 straight minutes. It was like, oh, good, we finally got through. Kids today have it way too easy.
Yeah, they don't know what it's like to suffer through waiting to dial up to see if you can get on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't know they're born. You know, sometimes it would take us about 25 minutes to download a picture.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine that.
An hour for a theme song.
Oh, if you wanted a theme song, you'd have to really want a theme song. Yeah. I remember pitching Napster. I remember when we got Napster, and I was like, this is great because it takes less time to walk to the shop to buy the single. don't pirate music. And then by the end of the time on AOL, I was like, actually, I could probably walk into town quicker and come back.
You're looking at your watch. This T.L. Hopper theme better be worth it.
Yeah. It's porn. Oh, for God's sake. I wanted T.L. Hopper's theme.
Well, speaking of piracy, we go back to the Lafitte. who hails from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
That's nice.
Because I believe Jean Lafitte was settled in Louisiana at some point. So, but they picked the most French-sounding city that's there.
They're very good with their hometowns of gimmicky wrestlers and stuff, aren't they?
Usually.
They've always been good. The fact that Dexter Lumis is from Recluse is great.
I always thought Haku had the best one in WCW, from some unknown part of the planet.
I like how it's not even the country, it's the planet.
Should have been Jor-El. So
I hear he's from Mercury.
So Lafitte gets a pretty understated entrance for a new character. Just kind of walks out amongst the shadows. Now, I realize you can't fit like a pirate ship in through this little venue. But it's kind of just walks
in. If they tried, they just chose not to try.
Exactly. We learned that the coins in the pouch around his neck are, and this is an exact quote from Vince, blessed by Cajun witch. Not a Cajun witch, but Cajun witch. Like it's a person's name.
Hi, I'm Cajun witch.
Hi, I'm Cajun witch. This is my wife, Susan.
Is my daughter, Blair.
And my son, man.
And my entrepreneurial cousin, Denny's Grand Slam.
God damn it, now I'm hungry again. So Lafitte has all this ornate stuff that he has to take off before the match. I imagine it can't be easy wrestling in those knee-high boots of his. It's very, he's very swashbucklery, though.
He looks very piratey. If there's one thing for our boy PCO, he looks very piratey.
Very much so. Yeah. We get a weird moment early on because, you know, we've discussed on the show before how Vince has to overemphasize if somebody's a heel. Like when Owen Hart would have, when some fans would cheer for Owen, Vince had to be like, oh, he must have paid for those fans to get in.
Yeah, like he has to lay it on a bit thick, doesn't he?
Yeah, like the fans can't cheer for him. He's the heel. We have to work to keep them the heel. Lafitte is wearing an eye patch as part of his gimmick, and of course we know that Carlo Letos is blinded in one eye from a childhood accident. No, he is legit.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's wearing the eye patch as part of the motif, and Vince disgustedly asks if Pierre can see through the patch, because somehow that would be cheating.
Imagine the mindset of that, of, oh, well, he's wearing an eye patch. If he takes his eye patch off, he's therefore cheating.
It's like, now can he see through that patch? That's like, it's like, what difference does it make? Jersey has two functional eyes. It's like he's trying to accuse him of something that makes no sense. Vince be the worst lawyer ever. So he has McDevitt.
Exactly. So he gets someone to do it for him.
So now, I had an expectation for this match because I haven't seen this in many years, decades.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking it's going to be 4 minutes tops, and Lafitte's going to just make look strong in victory and finish him off, because we haven't seen Duke in a while. Duke's just here to eat the pin, basically. This match went 11 minutes.
This was too long. This should have been a random, and I know there's a lot of random jobber action on Raw in general, but this is a match that should have had just a random jobber for Pierre to eat up.
Oh yeah, and Jersey like dominated half of it.
Mm.
What should have happened if you're gonna make something out of this, turn it into a feud, have Lafitte steal his trash truck.
That'd have been amazing.
I mean, come on, how can you not get behind a guy who steals a trash truck?
The story could be that Duke, maybe Pierre was having a yard sale selling off his piratey wares, and Duke accidentally thought it was garbage because it was very close to the sidewalk, so he put it in the truck, and Pierre's like, you threw out my family heirlooms, now you will die.
See, this is
a story.
That's fanfic I can get behind.
I made an attempt, which is more than they did.
Why did you make Lafitte the new repo man? Spell his name R-E-P-A-U-X.
Repo man. Repo Gaston.
Oh, uh-huh, what's mine is mine. What's yours is mine too.
Repo monsieur. John.
Yes.
John.
Well, that's a slam dunk for John. If you're French, we apologize for our accents, but we are Monty Python fans. Can't hear you.
I'll never apologize for my accent.
But so you didn't knock your mic out of frame there.
In tapping my mic to alert John, I turned it off.
I was gonna say, like, oh no. Yeah, then.
Oh no, whatever we do, Tom's not here anymore.
Now go away. Now go away, or Lafitte shall taunt you a second time.
I fart in your general direction. Your mother was a hamster. And your son smells of elder pennies.
Would Vince find that brilliant? Ace that fart.
Yeah, but if Vince had written Monty Python and the Holy Grail, it would have become an entire film about the Frenchman on the castle saying fart to people. And then it would have bombed and Vince would have gone, well, I just don't understand it. That was the best part of the film.
And then Hacksaw Jim Duggan beats him at the end and raises the American flag.
That's exactly what would have happened in America.
He does the running gag where he's running 800 yards away and the guard's watching him. He gets closer. And all of a sudden he clotheslines him.
And then he just reappears with a 2.4.
Monty Python search for better third hour ratings.
Here's Seth Rollins. He's not the Messiah. He's a very naughty boy.
It's the life of Daniel Bryan.
Oh. John.
How shall we fuck off of mid-carder?
You're all mid-carders. Yes, we're all mid-carders. Now, fuck off. How shall we fuck off, Daniel?
I can see this too. How dare we make the show entertaining? We are putting a lot of adobo on this rotten chicken to try and get something out of it.
Apart from excellent wrestling, high quality production values, and a future for the industry, what has NXT ever given us? apart from Sasha Banks, Bayley, Charlotte Flair, all the others. What has NXT ever given us?
Well, it didn't give us this.
No, it certainly didn't. We do have a commentary line that I've got some expanded information on.
Oh, no.
So if you remember pop-up video from back in the day on VH1.
Yeah.
Imagine you're watching this as Vince and Jerry Lawler are talking about Princess Diana seen shopping in Washington, D.C.
Oh, no.
In Washington, rather. So, like, whoop. Princess Diana did indeed go shopping in Washington in this particular week. Mm-hmm. They shot JCPenney on the Monday morning when this episode was going to air. They shot JCPenney. And Diana and Charles and their aides all went in and had a big old look around JCPenney. And in her time walking around JCPenney, Princess Diana, may she rest in peace, candle in the wind, bought an $8 silk scarf and then left. But, and before you go, cheapskate, because word got round that Diana had come in and bought this particular $8 silk scarf, word traveled really quick. Within an hour after the store opened to regular people, that scarf had completely sold out.
Oh, that's power of cult of personality.
Power of Lady Di. Lady Di, candle in the wind.
I can only hope that her and Charles went to Spencer's Gifts afterwards. What does this thing do?
I hope they went to the M&M store. Would it have been there, actually? No, that's in Times Square, isn't it? What am I talking about?
Yeah, DC's something different.
What shop would it be weird for Princess Di to go in? I think Hot Topic.
Yeah, Di comes out wearing a tragically hip shirt. For 95.
God bless you, Princess Di, Candle in the Wind. You have to say that in the UK when you mention Princess Di, Candle in the Wind.
I think when you say Sabu's name, he has to point at the ceiling.
Yeah, so when Sabu points, we go Princess Di, Candle in the Wind.
Trying to Sabu Princess Di parallel.
Hey, I've just realized this is funny. I there was a tweet that did the rounds over the weekend, this past weekend, which said that the person born 58 days after you is your mortal enemy. And I thought, oh, okay, it sounds like hokum, but this is fun. So I thought, who was born 28 days after, or 58 days after my birthday? And lo and behold, it's Elton John. So Elton John is my mortal enemy now. So here I am going Candle in the Wind.
Well, now I have to see this for myself here.
Yeah. I'll just check. It's 58 days. 58 days.
And give me the date. November 6th.
What's your birthday?
November 16th.
I should know that, shouldn't I?
Okay. January what?
Wednesday, January the 13th.
January 13th.
You can do this at home if you're listening to the cult.
Oh, one of my best friends has that birthday.
There you go then.
That's interesting. And let me just find a famous person so I could make this semi-entertaining.
January.
Andrew Yang comes up. No, I'm not Vince.
Famous birthdays, January 13th. Liam Hemsworth, mate. Chris Hemsworth's brother, the one that is... Oh, Patrick Dempsey?
That's an interesting shout. Rip Taylor.
Yes!
Well, don't worry. I won that one.
Rip's coming for you, mate.
With a bucket of confetti. La-di-da, la-di-da.
Oh, my God, mate!
Robert Stack!
Elaine from Seinfeld!
What do you mean I'm not sponge-worthy? Okay, enough having fun. Back to the show.
Oh, do we have to?
I know.
Bill Bailey shares your birthday.
Who?
He won Strictly Come Dancing this year. He's a comedian from over here.
I was gonna say,
musical instruments. He's brilliant.
Is he the guy in the comic strip about military life? That's Beetle Bailey.
That's Beetle Bailey. Wrong Bailey. You'll know Bill Bailey. He's a musician from the UK who has described his head as looking like an egg with a shower curtain behind it.
Okay. So this match slows down. Thank God we were talking during it. Vince is back to reading the paper and
it says it all, doesn't it, that Vince is just thumbing through the paper.
This is Jean-Pierre Lafitte's debut.
Well, hey, what's your horoscope, Jerry?
This is Jean-Pierre Lafitte's debut.
It's awful, mate.
Dead on arrival.
And it sucks because there's so much potential with this boy.
There's a flying nothing spot they filmed from the wrong angle, so we see that he didn't even hit Pierre in the face with his boot. As his match limps on into day six. Round the clock coverage of Jersey versus Lafitte. But finally, Jersey misses a flying splash, which I'm amazed he attempted. Pierre goes up, cannonball. I'm sorry, I was doing Anchorman.
Jeff Hardy watching somewhere going, that'll be a good move.
Jean-Pierre Lafitte wins. It was a very dull match. And it's like to the back because they don't even linger on this impressive win by this newcomer. Now let's just move on.
Whose idea was it to debut Jean-Pierre Lafitte in a competitive match against, with the greatest of respect, a lower mid-carder?
I don't know, but you see how they're having problems in 95.
Yeah.
Pierre could have been really valuable for you.
I don't get it. I mean, like, okay, NXT in 2021, they tend to do these things where they will debut somebody against a fairly compos mentis mid-card type. And the formula is very much the same. You'd have early start by the newcomer, bit of a comeback by the Compass Mentis mid-carder, but it's a short form. The new guy wins. That kind of is how they go. They don't want to, they don't bury the newcomer, but at the same time, they don't completely bury the mid-carder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get a couple of knocks in there. This, like, if this had been Drozzi getting a couple of punches in on Jean-Pierre and then maybe quickly going for that splash off the top missing, that would have been all right. Then Pierre recovers, hits that lovely scent on Cannonball. That would have been fine. But no, we have to have, for some reason, a long-winded competitive match between the two.
I just realized Bob Holly worked his taping three times and this match went 11 minutes. Was there like an outbreak?
That is really like Bob Holly.
It's just, where is everybody?
I think there must just be a shortage of people on the ground, and they're just using, they're in this midst of using Bob Holly a lot. So I think it's just a bit of that. It's a lot of love for Bob at the moment,
I suppose, because this was this felt like hour three of a taping, as we'll continue to point out. Then we get a bit with Bob Backlund on spring break, because this Bob Backlund joke cannot die. So Bob Backlund. Okay.
This was interesting. I wasn't massively against this as a thing.
So we see Bob Backlund is on the beach. He has the nose gunk on, but he's wearing his otherwise tuxedo outfit minus the jacket. It's warm, but he kept the shirt and vest. You right there, Tommy?
I like it. Personally, mm-hmm. It was just very Alex walked through the door, so I was just saying hello. Okay. Just shouting hello.
You lost your head for a second there on Zoom.
Oh, bye.
Oh, no.
I now live in 1995.
Yeah. The show's so bad, we're just amusing ourselves at this point.
Goodbye forever. Yeah, so Bob, to explain that, we're doing this on Zoom, and I have the Monday Night Raw background behind me to set the mood. One day we might show you.
Don't threaten me like that.
When we sell tickets to Cultaholic Classic Raw Review live. We'll do this, mate. One day we will do this show live.
That fills me with dread.
We will do it live in front of a crowd when we can. When the world's not on fire. I will come to a Mania week. We will do this show live in front of a crowd. In Texas for 38.
I don't want to go to Texas.
Come to Texas with me, mate. Mania 38. Mania week. We'll have a lovely time, me and you. We'll have a lads week in Mania. And then we'll do this podcast live.
I'm from Philly. I'm from Philly. I refuse to set foot in Dallas.
Pachiti will foot the bill. It's fine. Pachiti will pay for everything. He'll give you the Cultaholic platinum card. It'll be fine.
You hear me?
That's you going, I think it's a great idea. So, tweet us if you think it's a great idea.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So Bob Backlund is on the beach with, as mentioned, with the nose goop and the jacketless tuxedo, which is a great look. He looks like a lost ventriloquist puppet. So he's going on and on about education to the camera, but the joke is the cameraman keeps wanting to look at the bikini girls that are just off to his left shoulder, and backs the camera back in place. So that's kind of amusing, but then they do it 12 times.
So the joke here is that Vince hires pervert cameramen. That's the gag.
Yeah, back on keeping this guy in line.
Yeah, as he should.
I mean, perhaps the gag could have been that Backlund was just so boring, he's bloviating at length. The cameraman's just trying to find something to take his mind off of, you know, this sermon he's being besieged by. And he gets stopped by Backlund 12 times.
Bless you for counting.
I did write "this goes on a while." I could have wrote that for the opener, too.
I think maybe they're just padding.
I think they are.
Yeah, because if we are at like the third hour of a taping, like this is just like what have we got left that we haven't put on telly yet? That and that.
This is the watered down orange drink. So we get the fuller footage of Sid being inducted into the $1 million corporation.
To go back to the Bob Backlund thing very quickly.
Okay.
My notes just say, I like this. I hope it goes somewhere. Yeah, that was your laughter. There is pretty much what my fear is, that it doesn't.
Well,
I like the idea of Bob on the beach.
I mean, it kind of goes somewhere, but then that doesn't go somewhere.
And nobody goes anywhere.
That's exactly it. So Vince accuses DiBiase of having Sid employed before WrestleMania, which is kind of a weird. It's like Vince is turning on the Jesse Ventura conspiracy theory at this point. What if Sid was on the payroll the entire time and cost Sean the match, knowing that he'd rather fight the larger Diesel than the smaller Sean? Follow the money trail, people.
Or sheeple.
Wake up, America. And how is it that Earl Hebner was the evil referee in the Hogan title switch, but then got hired afterwards? And also, who closes the door when the bus driver gets off? I've never figured that out, McMahon.
If Barbie is so popular, why do you have to buy her friends?
It's how they get you with the money. They're bleeding you
follow
dry.
The money trail.
Like Homer watching JFK.
Like, I think back and to the left.
So we have Doink next. Speaking of things that just won't go away, Doink versus Roy Raymond.
I did Google Roy Raymond, and it came up with the guy who founded Victoria's Secret.
I don't think this is him.
I don't think this is the same guy.
I was hoping it was Rob.
I think
Roy.
The only Victoria's Secret he found was maybe something that belonged to his wife in her bedside table.
I was hoping this would be Rob Roy, and I could watch the movie instead.
Rob Roy. Welcome to the Cultaholic Classic Rob Roy review.
See, whilst the other lads are.
The other lads are watching, Vikings on Amazon Prime Video. We are here back in 1671 discussing Scottish outlaws who become folk heroes.
So, you know, Vince is completely out to lunch on this show because. So as soon as this shizen begins, Vince goes on about this survey about what men sleep in. Some sleep in underwear. Some don't sleep in anything at all. What you said about padding, I think, is true.
Vince, and I know what Vince is doing. Like, Vince is doing what radio jocks do all the time, just thumbing through the newspaper to drop in a little bit of topicality. And it's sometimes at the expense of just decent creativity. Like, instead of he's so adamant that he wants to make this plate of warmed up Chinese food from 3 nights ago look like a freshly made meal for two from a sophisticated restaurant, that he's not focusing on the matter at hand, which is you've just had a guy make their debut and you couldn't be stuffed. You have a major angle taking place ahead of a new type of pay-per-view and you just can't be bothered.
It's not good.
It's really not. Jerry Lawler's 180 on Duckman shows how little attention is being paid in this show.
Got the Duckman shirt and Vince buries him for wearing it.
Yeah.
Like, can you imagine Vince burying like what's on USA Now? Like, hockey? You watch hockey?
I can if the hockey meant that the wrestling had been delayed.
What kind of loser could sit and watch 8 hours of Law & Order SVU reruns in a row? You have nothing to do on your day off, asshole?
It's a better offer.
Do some origami or something, Jesus.
You'll have the option soon enough when you get the Peacock Premium WWE Network.
Oh, yeah, it's...
How does that affect you? Have you already got Peacock?
I don't have Peacock yet, but I guess I'll have to get it now.
You got to get it now, right? I think you get migrated over. I think that's what they said in the news thing, that if you're a WWE Network subscriber in the US, you get migrated over.
I feel like a WWE undercarder. I just want to have some freedom and enjoy myself, but now I have to deal with the office. Not even the good office either.
That's the gag. The winner.
Not even the good office. The one with all the GIFs.
Yours is all right.
No, it's not.
Not too bad.
Hey, look, Pam has this expressionless look on her face and she stared at the camera. Hilarity.
I mean, that's kind of what the British one was about, but I think they just made it two seasons and then called it a day.
Hey, Jim's being an asshole to Dwight again. But Jim's the hero in the situation. Oh, the hell with that show. Anyone ever liked with Stanley?
They did stretch it.
Stanley had it right. He just hated everybody.
You Stanley in that office then?
I understand Stanley.
Relate to Stanley.
So this match sucks, except for when Doink hits a Dr. Death-esque backdrop driver.
That was phenomenal.
That almost kills Roy Raymond.
That was too good.
Doink was all Japan-esque in that moment.
I'd like it if Doink just decided to start wrestling, like
John, please
just going full Dr. Death.
John, please add Doink to the four pillars. Make him the fifth pillar. With Misawa, Kawada, Taue, and Kobashi. Doink.
And tag them all in it. Without context.
See, Doink could have won the Champions Carnival. We know that. It's a carnival. Of course Doink could win it.
Do you know what? I'm genuinely here for a Doink the Clown that wrestles like an absolute machine.
Well, Matt Bourne kind of did that.
Yeah, exactly. We like what we had with Matt Bourne. Like a clown that comes out popping kids' balloons with cigars and then just beats the shine out of somebody.
He was good at it, and then they ruined it because they had to make it one note.
Yeah, they do that, don't they? They try. They shrink everything down. They feast everything down into like this one malleable paste with so many gimmicks. They just go, that's your thing. They don't consider that maybe a food can be multiple flavors. It doesn't just have to be the one.
Gotta keep it simple because people are simple.
I think Vince McMahon eats his meat wraps without a single bit of seasoning on.
Probably. Yeah.
I don't think he seasons his food. Vince doesn't season his food. Pass it on.
Yeah. You don't enjoy food, you conquer it.
I beat my dinner.
He beats his meat.
I beat my meat.
So, speaking of Vince and things he finds amusing, Whoopi Cushion finishes and they bring the sound effect back. You even think it's a version of it. And he gets his own little Whoopi Cushion sound.
It's a high-pitched version, doesn't he? Bless his little face.
It's pretty dumb. But the only part that amused me, other than Dwayne going all Japan here, was Lawler talking about upcoming NFL draft pick Kajana Carter, and now every team's going to vie for him. I thought it was kind of amusing because he washed out of the NFL after 9 seasons. 9 injury-plagued seasons, which he never reached his potential. Meanwhile, he's being talked about like as though he was the next big thing, and well, they had high hopes and it didn't work out.
It is a that particular bit of knowledge I wasn't aware of. I knew he mentioned it, and I thought I should have made a note to ask you about that, because normally whenever they go, "Hey, this guy's gonna be a thing," I always go, "I must ask Justin if that guy became a thing."
Well, long story short, Kajana Carter was a running back who was a top pick in the draft. Cincinnati picked him first. So, and being the first pick, he has high expectations, obviously, and repeated knee injuries and such, and he never had like one good season in his career, and he just kind of fell into the dustbin as one of those busts that wasn't really his fault, unfortunately. It just happened.
Well, Jerry Lawler had high hopes at this particular week in 1995.
So did most football experts. So he wasn't going out on a limb there. He was following the consensus.
Fair enough.
We get the first in your house report of many.
Oh, I like Todd's table.
It's very nice.
Nice. It looks like a corner of a ring. I'm here for that. I'm here for that.
And yet it's contemporary. It's kitschy yet contemporary.
Yeah, I wish he could have brought that back when they did take over in your house.
He should have
a little table in front of him.
And they probably sold it to pay for Brett's contract in 97.
Quite likely. Instead of yard sale.
And then Duke picked it up and threw it in the truck.
I feel like that'd be a good little mini game in WWF in your house, like the bonus round, and there's Bret Hart, like there's a moving truck with Bret Hart in it, and you have to throw money at the moving truck to make the truck come back. But then he stays for a bit,
and then after a year you decide no go, rather have the money.
But exactly, because that's what happened.
But I digress. Todd has the balls to call this as unpredictable as WrestleMania.
Well, I can't predict who's going to win a house.
So that's true.
The one thing I noticed about these In Your House report, and I think this will be the case going forward, there's a lot of heavy emphasis on this being a family night. A family night for all the families. And then it dawned on me, okay, because it's on Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. This pay-per-view is on Mother's Day.
Yes.
So they're pitching it, the whole idea of, hey, you know what to get for your mom? What about a WWF pay-per-view? Get all the family together to watch this. Please, dear God, watch this. We're struggling. And I admire the guts of that to go, let's pitch this as a family night activity when blatantly it's not.
If I bought my mom a wrestling pay-per-view for Mother's Day, I'd still be grounded.
Happy Mother's Day. We're going to watch Zid versus Diesel.
It is good that you bring that up, though, because Todd really went into overdrive here, putting over WWF as the leader in pay-per-views, the leader in sports entertainment, for two reasons. One, UFC, as you mentioned earlier, where there's smoke, there's fire. And the other, a certain rival wrestling organization has expanded its pay-per-view calendar and maybe taking a few more bites out of the WWF piece of the pie.
This is true. So they're doing more Clash stuff, aren't they?
Not so much Clash stuff, but I mean, they're running Great American Bash and Bash at the Beach now in the same year, which is the first time they've ever done that.
Because normally they do one or the other.
Yes. Actually, they kind of did it in 92, sort of. That was Beach Blast, but same principle. But they have Slamboree in May. They just had Uncensored in March. They're tightening up the calendar now. And WWF is now going to this In Your House model to try and compete, to try and stave off the dragon with this cheaper option.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of running like a cheaper pay-per-view isn't a bad one.
Yeah, it's like an in-between a Saturday night's main event and a regular pay-per-view. It's kind of in the middle.
I think if I'd been a wrestling fan at this point, I think if it was like the equivalent of like £9 or £10 for like a smaller pay-per-view, I probably would have invested, or got my mum or dad to invest. I probably would have been behind that. If it was a smaller show, I might be behind that now. If it's like, hey, it's a smaller show, it's but 5 matches, some beefy stuff on there, it's a tenner. Oh, yeah, okay, I'll sink a tenner.
Well, we'll see if this show is worth $15.
We will find out together.
Because so far we only have one match announced. It is Diesel versus... And Well, at least Diesel and Sid have new promo shots rather than Diesel staring off camera and Sid half staring at the camera, half staring off camera.
They've actually made a little bit of effort with them, haven't they? They made a nice bit of effort with them, which I quite like. And they're outside the house that they're going to give away.
Yeah, exactly. They should have fought in the house. Just up the retail.
Missed opportunity.
But then again, Orton and Wyatt did the same thing, and that was no good.
But then they didn't give away the house.
Oh no!
I'd have gone for that house.
I wouldn't want that house. Would not want that house.
The house itself looks lovely. They're giving away for this, by the way. It looks like a lovely house. I did a little search on Google Street View because you can see you can still see where it's based online. It's still a place. And it looks lovely. It's on next to a golf course. It's overlooking a lake. It's in Orlando, Florida. It's a nice holiday home. Yeah, I'd have had a go. I'd have had a go at winning a house.
And of course, there's just two plugs here. It's Diesel versus Sid, and of course, the house plug. And that's about it. That's all we have so far. 4 weeks to go.
But Sid and Diesel, that'll sell it, surely.
No.
That'll sell it, surely.
See, Tom made a face there. You people didn't see that.
Yeah, I did a face. Because spoiler, Sid and Diesel won't sell it.
No. It bonded two companies. So then we come to what I figured was going to save the show. The tag team title match with Owen Hart and Yokozuna taking on 1-2-3 Kid and Bob Holly. This is Holly's third match of this taping. He faced Hakushi 2 weeks ago. He was part of the six-man tag last week, although he was in it sparsely. He came in for the hot tag and got the pin at the end, really. Now we have this. There's a lot of red in this match.
From Vince McMahon at the start of this one, as 1-2-3 Kid and Bob Holly were coming out. And the first thing Vince says is, "Do you believe in miracles?" God, mate, they've not even started wrestling yet, you know?
He stole that from Al Michaels. The famous U.S. versus Russia hockey game in 1980. That's Al's signature call. Right as time ran out with the U.S. barely holding the lead over the fearsome Russian team. Do you believe in miracles? Yes! Right as the horn sounds. It's one of those contemporary calls you always remember.
So that's up there with England winning the World Cup in 66. The famous call of the commentator saying, and the crowd are already on the pitch. They think it's all over. It is now. It's that level of sporting importance.
Yes, it's part of the lexicon. It's one of those, you remember just that signature. Like I was watching Vince Scully's famous call recently of Hank Aaron's 715th home run, the one that broke Babe Ruth's record, because Hank Aaron passed away days before we recorded this. Just like certain calls just stay with you. And Al Michaels, when he called the U.S. big upset over Russia 41 years ago, Jesus Christ, it was a memorable call that endures to this day, and Al will even parody it sometimes because it's that well known to this day. Vince here just throws it out arbitrarily, like I remember when somebody said that once. How about some context, douche? But don't worry, we have something contemporary here because Lawler compares 1-2-3 Kid's hair to Marsha Clark's hairstyle.
Oh Christ!
And then Vince, because we can't just have a topical reference, Vince has to make it dumb and nonsensical. Says, "I think it's more like Johnny Cochran's."
What?
All right, Johnny Cochran never had long hair, as far as I know.
I was gonna say, Cochran's always been a short-haired man.
Yeah, and I'm trying to. I think Vince just heard the name Johnny Cochran, thought it'd be funny just to say it.
I will say they're in matching outfits this week, a Kid and Holly. I like that as a man who likes a tag team to match, and sometimes they don't, and it annoys me. I like a tag team that matches, and they match, and it's good. I applaud this.
Kid and Holly definitely going for the tag team expert thing here. Mm-hmm. And then I think they split after this.
For God's sake. Just got your matching gear, and you bin it off. It's like buying a house with someone and breaking up.
Like, wait, the way of being impulsive and breaking a team up? You're kidding me. So, Owen and Kid get a decent sequence, start off the match. A lot of decent offense early on. It's fine. It's kind of house show-like. And I'm just going through here. Holly ends up being
there's
the one.
There's one bit in this that stood out to me. It was like a very sort of standard tag match. Mm. Yoko bumping for Bob Holly.
Oh yeah,
Holly does like he ran off the ropes and Bob Holly did the face pull and threw Yoko to the mat. I was like, really? Yoko bumping for Bob.
Must have plans for Bob at this point, or tentative plans. Maybe they changed by the time this match aired, but they were really trying to get Holly over as someone worthwhile, and he was a valuable wrestler. Someone that you could, with the right packaging, get something out of.
I feel like you'd save that moment, maybe.
And maybe toward like the end of the match when you're trying to build to a big finish.
I felt in the first couple of minutes, it was weird because for the first part of this match, and I don't know whether I watched it wrong, the first part of this match, it felt like Owen and Yoko had reversed roles. It felt like Owen went in there and did the slow beat down, and then Yoko came in and bumped around everywhere.
They were trying to amuse each other by saying, okay, you be Yoko for this match and I'll be Owen.
Do you know what? I could get behind Owen Hart just going, hey, look, just for giggles, you be me tonight and I'll be you.
And then Yoko puts Kid in the sharpshooter and breaks him in six places.
Oh my God. Imagine wrapping a sharpshooter with those thunder thighs of Yokozuna. Jeepers.
It's like trying to tie a pretzel rod into a knot.
trying to tie a metal pole into a knot.
At one point, Vince actually utters a phrase, the key here is continuity. And I'll spit my drink out because I realize who said that.
If only Vince could tell himself that now, we'd be all right in the wrestling world.
I'm not sure he could spell it anymore. So Holly takes a long beating. A long beating. This is an eternal beating. He's in peril for a long time. Yeah. I gotta say, it's weird because Kid should be the one who gets the hot taking the beating because that's what Kid does. He's the Ricky Morton of this. Kid takes the beating, gets the sympathy. Holly jazzes the crowd up and begs for the tag, tries to urge his partner on, but no, it's inverted here. Holly gets beaten and beaten. He gets some hoop spots, a backslide, an inside cradle, reverses a superplex at one point, but Owen drops him with the Owen Zugiri. Holly's still in peril, and I've been watching this match since we started the podcast 2.5 years ago.
Some say Holly is still in peril right now.
He may be. Finally, we hit the double down. Then Kid gets the hot tag. He's fiery. Kid's comeback was great. Just high kicks galore. Kicking with Owen and Yoko. With crowds buying into him. Might see a title change. Gets a corkscrew suicide dive onto Owen. Comes back off the top rope to Yoko. Caught belly to belly. And that's your finish. A minute after the hot tag.
I mean, the finish was good. It was just like very sudden.
It was like a bizarre edit. Like they edited out like 3 minutes worth of stuff. But was
very odd.
You know what? I think they were going along and they realized, oh crap, there's still one match left after this. And it's an important match. So we have to save room for that. Don't worry.
But then you think, like, could you, like, it all comes back to timing. And even to this day, this company does have these days where they struggle with timing. Like, of all the matches that we've seen tonight, I'd have given this one more time. Like, I would have taken, I'd have shaved a couple of minutes off Duke and Pierre and given a little extra something to this match. Whether it's an injury spot or something, I don't know.
Well, the other side of that is these four had to be tired.
Yeah.
There's that too. They've already worked several times each. Holly, this is his third friggin' match of the night. And this is the day after Mania, so Owen and Yoko had already had that match. It's, you know,
all the more reason to do an injury thing. You could have done a bit where, like, you have Bob and Kid go out, and early in the match, Bob lands badly, gets taken to the back, and Kid's fighting on his own for ages. Mm-hmm. And here comes Bob to make the rescue. Bob's had a nice sleep backstage. You've had some jeopardy. Job's a good one.
You could have, but... they didn't. We get a drunk driving PSA from The Undertaker, which we've seen a while ago. But they dug up. See what I did for this one.
Hey, you little cheeky. And I will dig up the same gag that I did last time.
hey, if you drink and drive, you'll meet me.
Oh, I get to meet The Undertaker and have a drink and drive. Brilliant. Give me a beer. Go for a trip.
If you want to meet me, either T-bone your car into a tree or pay $1,000 for a cameo.
Darling, I'm going for a drive.
Well, I don't drink, but Brian, I would like to talk to The Undertaker.
Don't drink and drive, but do take a knife into your place of work.
I was going to say, this is kind of funny seeing this PSA given the interpretation of Taker's recent comments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was an interpretation of Taker's recent comments, where everyone's gone, so Undertaker hates video games but loves knives.
Yeah, it's there's a little more middle ground here. I think he's just saying like people came from a different place back then. If he's saying it's better, that's his opinion. But it's I think we need to chill out a little bit on that.
I think so. And plus, Undertaker, right? If you hate games and love knives, I present to you Fruit Ninja. It's a bit of both.
Okay.
Game and it's knives.
I'll just play the Friday the 13th game. That has both.
There you go. That's a good one as well. John, can you please Photoshop Undertaker playing Fruit Ninja, please? He'd love it. And tag him in it. Yeah. Tag him in it and put Undertaker, lad. Here's a game y'all like. Do that, John, and I love you. Don't tag me. You have to say it as if you're saying it without being prompted.
Yes, allow Tom to weasel his way out of this.
And if you tag me in it and say Tom told me to say this, I'll just block all communication.
Tom's setting the fire and walking away.
I'm basically setting a fire influence. And then leaving.
Okay. All right. This next match. We need to reset here because we need all of our focus for this next match.
Oh no, do we?
This may be the worst thing that's happened on Raw to this point.
It's the main event, though.
Well, hang on. We have to explain. This is no disrespect to the men involved in this match, but Henry Godwin versus Ramblin' Rich Myers. Now, on the surface, this just sounds like a regular squash match with Myers and his nice Brian Pillman Jr.-esque mullet. But there's more to it than that, because what we have here is a network tie-in. You see, they've been plugging Duckman incessantly for the last couple of weeks. And what happens next is one of the characters from Duckman calls into the show. Now, Duckman, mind you, is a cartoon.
I love this.
So Vince and Lawler have a conversation with a cartoon character. They couldn't get Jason Alexander to play Duckman for this because he had anything better to do. So instead, they got his non-union equivalent. His co-star, Greg Berger, who was the voice of Cornfed. Cornfed is Duckman's detective partner. He's the straight-laced one. The responsible one, sort of dry, has a very deep voice, kind of talks like this a little bit, you know, kind of like a mumble talk. So he calls in as Cornfed, and I made sure I wrote my notes. Oh boy! So Godwin is just beating up Rich Myers, who's dressed like Bret Hart this week for some reason. He gets the wheelbarrow powerbomb face first deal that I like, but now they're having a conversation with freaking Cornfed. Cornfed. I forgot this part happened. Cornfed plugs Tech War.
Yeah, he does.
He goes on a USA show to plug a different USA show that he's not on. USA was hurting at this point. Oh, were they hurting? Oh my goodness.
I just liked hearing Cornfed talking about Tech War.
That's great. I just want it written. The show went off a cliff when the talking pig started talking about Tech War.
And we actually got the on-the-phone corn-fed with a shot of his of an animation cell of him on the side of the screen.
While Henry looks like corn-fed's arm. It was such a bad shot. It was like somebody had just paused the TV and taken a photo.
With Henry Godwin beating up Rich Myers on the other side.
But then Cornfed's talking about the match. I can't get my head around it. Like, Cornfed's going, yeah, Henry Godwin, he's pretty tough. Like, what's going on?
Well, it makes sense that you have him calling during the Hog Farmers match. They booked a Henry Godwin match so a talking pig could call into the show and talk to Vince.
It's amazing. It's just amazing.
He makes a spandex joke that Vince laughs uproariously at.
Oh yeah, because he talks about Jerry Lawler challenges him to a wrestling match. Mm-hmm. To which Cornfed says, "I would love to get involved in a six man tag." I don't know why he said a six man tag, but I have an allergic reaction to spandex. And Vince was, yeah, like you say, Vince's like. What fun we're having.
You know, I can't imagine why Nitro start kicking their ass.
Me neither. They must have got Jason Alexander on.
They must have. So Slopdrop finishes Myers. This is still going on, this conversation. We can look inside.
I'm just looking, as the conversation is going on, I am looking at Greg Berger's IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
The voice of Cornfed from Duckman. And you know what? He's done loads of stuff.
I believe it. Voice actors have a lot of tend to find a lot of work, especially the good ones. He has a good voice.
Odie and Orson, he was Odie and Orson Pig in Garfield and Friends for many years.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple characters in Bonkers. He was the Grumble in Our Real Monsters.
This man was prolific.
The teacher from Our, who I haven't thought about the Grumble since 1998.
That's why we do this
and
show.
Now all I can think about is the Grumble.
God damn, he's 70 years old now.
Oh, God, love him. And he's still doing stuff.
Yeah, keeping busy, apparently.
He was in Crash Team Racing. He's a voice in Crash Team Racing.
Help me out here. What the hell is the Epic Tales of Captain Underpants? I'm on the Wikipedia page.
Captain Underpants. It's based on a book. Who's the author of Captain Underpants? It's, I have a feeling it's a British book. They've turned it into a film as well. Mm. Oh, no, it's Dav Pilkey's from America. No, it was a book series, and they did a big screen movie release for it. It's quite good, Captain Underpants. It was a kid's series.
I see. He was also on the Men in Black cartoon. He was Agent K.
He is a well-traveled voiceman.
Clearly. And he caught into this show.
A gig's a gig.
We should get him on the Raw review, see how he'll do it.
I reckon he would. Just get him to call in, but as the Grumble, to plug Tech War.
Let's just confuse him. And then our parting shot for this is the inside of Henry Godwin's slop bucket, which supposed to make Cornfed hungry. And I noticed there's a soda tab in there. Henry Godwin is feeding metal to his pigs.
I think we need to call the RSPCA or the American equivalent.
It's after that match, we get the ad campaign with the culture people.
Oh, I don't get this campaign at all.
Because someone is feeling insecure about what they're putting on TV. But it's after that match if we get this.
They just have no self-awareness. Here's a pig farmer fighting with a whilst a cartoon pig talks to us. Cut to old, well-off people talking about the WWF.
The aristocracy.
The aristocracy. If they'd been around back in the day, it would have cured the plague. What is this? Don't get it.
It reminds me of this one Dilbert comic strip, which just stayed with me for a while. I can't remember the exact verbiage, but the point was... the evil boss is talking about is that a meaning reading from a paper? He says, we're taking part in this charity endeavor. Should we care about people? And our next item, we're laying off 10% of our workforce next week. He turned to the secretary. I told you to order these better.
Somebody's getting sacked for the pacing of this show.
What a juxtaposition. They put the hog farmer match in front of the aristocracy. Oh, they're so cultured. They're so divine. Oh, splendid. But the punchline for this is the WWF 100% naturally good. I almost fell out of my chair laughing. You don't even drug test, you assholes.
I think somebody needs to drug test. It's right in this. I think Vince was tired when he wrote this episode of Raw. I think he was tired.
too much Easter dinner.
Too much big Easter dinner. Because they went, Vince, we need a slogan for the end of this aristocracy bit. Oh,
it's such good
WWF,
shit.
WWF 100% naturally good.
It's such good shit.
It's such good shit would have been a far funnier out. And I think if the out had been WWF, it's such good shit. That'd have been fine.
I'm just laughing at how stupid the last 5 minutes of this show were. It's amazing. This actually happened.
Honest to God, I know that there's some people who listen to this and don't watch the Raw episodes. They just like listening to us talk, and it's lovely, and we thank you for being there. But, oh my God, try and watch some of these episodes with us in particular, because they're a trip. They're a trip. They really are. And this one is something special. This is what happens when you become a long-running episodic TV show. You are just, some days, just throwing stuff together to get it out. And this is an example of it.
This is like 100 episodes of like watching an E-True Hollywood Story before they went to rehab. We're watching the downfall. We're watching the drug-addled madness kick in.
It's amazing. This is my 600-pound life before they've seen Dr. One.
We cut back to ringside and holy effing green screen. I think Vince and Lawler are now further from the guardrail.
They've been pushed for their own safety because everybody wants a piece of Jerry Lawler's Duckman t-shirt.
Exactly. They should just like put like stock footage behind him of a Cowboys movie from like the 50s, just like the horses going by.
Or like gazelles in the
a rocket gazelle launch
out in the field. Oh my God, that'd be amazing. Like some 50s dancing.
It's like Rex Kramer driving to the airport in Airplane. What's up going on behind him?
Or every scene in the car in Police Academy.
Pretty much.
They'd have some fun with that. I bet they would in production.
We learn on next week's show that Bertha Faye will be in action while Blaze is currently recuperating from her schnozzola damage.
At this point, the Bertha Faye thing, we've got high hopes for a living, because the images of her in her Monster Ripper getup.
Yes.
So at the moment, we're thinking this beast is landing. This is pretty cool.
Wait till next week.
I know where this goes.
I know it's coming. It's not good.
Don't like it.
You got Diesel versus Bam Bam for the title.
Now that's cool.
In theory.
Diesel and Bammers?
In theory, yeah. It's they really emphasize that the Bam Bam has now been left in the background because of the loss to LT. He's being ostracized by his fellow Dick Tracy villains. Lawler tries claiming that Bigelow had the flu at Mania, and that's why he lost. Trying to build him back up as a threat, because how do you go from losing the main event to a non-wrestler to being in the world title match 3 weeks later and having fans buy into it?
I think they've had harder jumps from one to the other.
Yeah, but this is still an Evel Knievel-like jump here.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see what they do with that.
Yeah, we will. We will get there. We'll get there. Is that Raw for this week?
That's Raw for this week. Thank God.
Oh, what a journey that was. We're in a weird old place. We had a potentially really strong debut. I think this show does smack of it's the last bit of taping for this block. And we're just seeing what's left at the bottom of the barrel and we're putting it out there, which is a shame because this is a show where Pierre Lafitte made his debut. We could have had some good pirate shenanigans in this one, which we didn't really get.
So, Tom, you're saying that these 3 hour Raw tapings within are bad because the third hour is always dead on arrival.
Mm.
But wait until the In Your House era when we have 4-hour Raw tapings. Because that's coming.
Oh, God. No, that's something else. That's something else. But until we get to meet again, he is at JRH Writing on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. War Stories, written by Justin Henry, on the Cultaholic YouTube channel right now. Subscribe, like it, share it, tell your friends, win a dog. Love you, bye! You can't win a dog, but love you, bye!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.